Welcome to Temple of Health Radio Show. This is Dr. Susan Kolb, and today I'm pleased to have as my guest Jennifer Gell, who is the author of The Science of Planetary Signatures in Medicine, Restoring the Cosmic Foundations of Healing. Jennifer does a great job of combining the concepts of spiritual knowledge to the disciplines of healing and incorporating sacred geometry and other more sacred sciences, and has written a great book. Thank you for joining me, Jennifer.
Well, thank you for having me.
So you instruct astro-harmonic medicine continuing education classes, is that right?
I had, when I began writing this book, that was the case. I developed an elective for the Acutonics curriculum, because the Acutonics curriculum is based upon the planetary sounds and tones. And so I felt that it was very important. It really goes to the heart of the sound therapy that we use in Acutonics. And since I've written the book, I actually have not been doing as much teaching, but I have been developing, I would say, a deeper, more customized application of the tones in my private sessions, and I'm developing ways to get this education out to really a broader audience beyond just those who practice Acutonics.
Great. You also had a co-author, Dr. Mark Mikoza, is that right?
Mikoza.
And he is a professor of physiology, biophysics, and pharmacology at Georgetown University School of Medicine. So that brought the medical perspective in.
Absolutely. I really wanted to, well, first of all, I have not been published previously, and the way mm-hmm. this whole book came about was in my first semester as a grad student. I went back to school. I have an undergrad in music. Music has always been a part of my life and a very healing part, too. Astrology came next at the age of, tender age of like 12, 13, when, you know, during that awkward time when we're wondering who we are, like, how, why don't we fit in? Or at least I was going through that. I feel so out of my element and uncomfortable in my own skin. Why don't I feel like I belong anywhere? And astrology really addressed those issues for me. But fast forward to then, as an adult, putting together ways to combine energy medicine, which I studied post-college, and mm-hmm. different, you know, various therapies of energy medicine. And finally decided I needed to go back to school to, you know, attain more credentials. So I got a master's in health sciences, wanting to then bridge this wide gap that still exists between complementary medicine and traditional, quote-unquote, or conventional medicine. So as a first semester grad student, I was studying complementary and alternative medicine, for which Dr. Mikoza wrote an excellent book. It was his textbook we were using. And mm-hmm. I reached out to him to thank him, and I told him about Acutonics, and one thing led to another. We began collaborating on writing. I had just written a paper on Acutonics, and he said, I think I can find room for this in my fifth edition textbook. So as a first semester grad student, I was getting published, and I thought, wow, this is really amazing. So that's kind of what hooked me into writing. And then in our further communications and collaborations, I said, hey, would you like to help me write a book? Because I felt like an idea that had come to me during, three or four years ago during an herbal class, I just like got hit with this phrase, bringing planetary medicine down to earth. Talk about the connection between plants and mm-hmm. planets.
Right. Well,
so,
there's a lot of...
answer,
I have a friend who's an astrologer, and she combines the two. Like, she'll make flower essences at a particular point in time because of the mm-hmm. chart of the time, and then the flower essences can be used for very specific things because of when they're actually harvested.
Oh, I love that.
So that's bringing the planetary
yes.
stuff down to plants, yeah. And
absolutely.
She told me a story. I had lunch with her this Saturday. She told me an interesting story. She gathered up all these mason jars of all these flower essences she'd done, like years and years, maybe 20 to 40 years ago. And she mm-hmm. gave them to a priestess that really understood all of that. And she combined them. And then she was at this this meeting with a lot of different practitioners. And she said the entire stock that she did sold out immediately. Of course, everybody there is very intuitive.
Wow.
But these were very, very powerful combination remedies for today. And I was saying, you know, it's very interesting that you were guided to make them over the last 30 years, maybe 40 years, but not use them until now.
Mm.
Isn't that wild?
That is very
But evidently, you know, right now we have more emotional turmoil than normal,
mm-hmm.
as you probably noticed. And emotional stability can be brought about by these flower essences.
Without a doubt. Yeah, I feel that there was specific timing, divine timing, if you will, around the writing of my book. And so many things were coming together for me intellectually and intuitively. It was almost like an Alice in Wonderland experience as I was writing this book, because I, you know, there is a lot, getting back to Dr. McCosey, I certainly wanted to substantiate all that I was experiencing and intuiting and those connections that I was making. I wanted to support that with the science and the history to satisfy those of, you know, a more rational mind, those who need that rational explanation for why something would or could work. And mm-hmm. But for me, it was really a very profound, cathartic, spiritual experience, a highly guided one. And so I just want to disclose that to listeners and make sure they understand. I am not an expert on any one of these different areas, except for my own experience and how I apply this wisdom, this ancient wisdom. So, mm-hmm. you know, for me, my language is astrology and viewing it as analogous to music. So the sheet of, you know, the actual chart, natal chart, is like a sheet of music. And it's going to come to life differently according to the consciousness of the individual, and then how I, as a facilitator, can encourage that divine wisdom to awaken in the person.
Right. So your first chapter is on ancient cosmology, and you talk about cosmic law. And the thing that caught my attention was precession of the zodiac ages. I didn't mm-hmm. realize that the age of Aquarius doesn't begin until 2161. That's interesting.
Yeah, well, this is according to the culture of astronomy, and but there are different. I'm not at the moment. Oh, Thomas Dietrich is the author of that book, and that was a resource that I used for the precessional ages.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where that number came from. But the thing with ages, we are all feeling the age of Aquarius right now. I mean, on the cusp of an age as we are, we're seeing plenty of the old ways die or, mm-hmm. you know, disintegrate. And we are simultaneously in the rebuilding phase or in the transformation phase. So there is a lot of the Aquarian age that is certainly happening right now. Definitely the technology, the really speedy advancement in technology And also, you know, with Aquarius, there is within that element or that expression, if you will, the temptation to detach, because it's an air sign. So it's all about, it wants to move constantly, circulate. Air, it's constantly moving. It doesn't, its challenge is to be present. And so we can see how we're losing person-to-person contact and eye-to-eye contact and really being present with one another because we're so into technology and, you know, cell phones. But I do believe that the high vibration of the age of Aquarius is really understanding the unity and the paradox of uniqueness and infinite variety of expressions within unity. So really the diversity of all beings, human beings, of plants, animals, and understanding. So it, in other words, it's the sign of the humanitarian.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And yeah, so embracing that concept instead of the separation of looking at things in black and white, if not this, that, if not that, this, which we certainly are and have experienced in the practice of medicine.
Mm-hmm. So, how would you characterize where we're at right now with medicine in terms of coming out of, I think we're coming out of the pharmaceutical age.
Yeah.
Hopefully we are. But how would you say we got to where we were, say, in the 50s and 60s when the pharmaceutical companies took control of medicine?
Well, honestly, when you look at the history of medicine, the birth of Western medicine, where things became so separate, is really when Hippocrates, even though Hippocrates was practicing still and believed in still our connection to the cosmos, and there was something up until the age of up until Hippocrates, physicians practiced Hermetic medicine, which understood that connection. But Hippocrates actually separated, took the energetic components out of medicine. So there was something called humoral medicine, the four humors, which corresponds to the four elements, fire, earth, air, water. They do operate in the body. However, up until the time of Hippocrates, physicians understood that these elements have a lower vibration, which is physical, matter, but they also have a higher vibration, which is spiritual and energetic. And so that is what became separated at the time of Hippocrates and the Hippocratic Oath. And so that was the birth of Western medicine. Now it has just come to its ultimate climax. And, you know, it's crescendoed to this point, pinnacle, I should say, where everything is so extremely divided, and we have dissected the body with a specialist for this, a specialist for that, and we've just forgotten to understand the body and the body parts as having a relationship among themselves. So not only does the human body have a relationship to its environment, which includes the cosmos, by the way, it has a relationship among all the internal organs. Those organs then have a matrix or a meridian system, and of course the four elements, which, you know, fire, earth, air, water is spirit, matter or physical substance, earth. Fire is spirit, earth is physical, water is emotion, and air is intellect. So those are the four components of a human being's life. And we've really just been focusing pretty much on the yang elements, which are earth and air. Yeah, so, oh, I'm sorry. the yang elements are fire and air. I take that back. But we've really been focusing on too much on the physical or earthly component.
Right. Yeah, it's not well known other than it's like kind of a wastebasket, you know. Oh, it's in their head. Oh, it's psychosomatic. Oh, it's this, you know. But stress causes all disease, you know, things like that. It's, it's like when you don't know what causes something, you blame it on stress or blame it on the psychosomatic or, you know, hypochondriac, you know, that kind of thing. And really, the balancing of everything is not ever considered.
You know,
the balancing of the different kinds of energy. Ardivedi, you know, basically is very good at defining different diseases when your different energies are out of balance, and then with herbs and baths and food, correcting that.
Exactly. Yeah. It's about harmony. It really is about living in harmony. So the body is an ecosystem. And when you pay attention to only one component of that entire system, or just a few, without understanding how they all relate to each other and have a domino effect. And I've used the analogy, too, of if you want to, you know, for a lot of people, we love our sports. And so think of the internal organs as a team. They certainly, you know, even in Chinese medicine, you've got the liver, which is the captain, which oversees the smooth flow of energy among all of the organs. And when they're operating as a team and no one gets fouled out of the game, or even if it's just for one game, you know, the body can compensate, the other team members can compensate. But when you're talking about an entire season or an entire life or many years of a person's life, you've really got a serious issue to deal with then.
Right.
I read something recently that I found very interesting, and had I known it, I would have included this in the book. But in Chinese medicine, they have three levels or grades of medicine. The first level is treating symptoms, the second level is preventative, and the third level, the highest level, is awakening one to his or her destiny.
Yeah,
and so,
right.
So I actually had not known that, but I thought, you know, that's just brilliant, because that is what I endeavor to do when I'm looking at a chart and applying those musical tones in a session.
Well, describe a little bit about what a session is like.
Well, it's looking at patterns. So the client will certainly, you know, they'll present with physical or emotional stress, whether it's pain or whatever is going on with them. And so they'll fill out the intake form, and I will assess their patterns, certainly find out from their perspective what they are experiencing. And then I will have already pulled the chart, the natal chart, to see what is their past conditioning and what is their compass for the soul's fulfillment. And this has to do with the nodes of the moon. The south node rules our past conditioning, and the north node rules our future, uncharted territories. So anything that challenges the south node would be a rite of passage or a hurdle, a challenge that the person needs to deal with, transform in order to fulfill the fullest expression of the north node. So I look at any challenging aspects to the nodes, and then I will create a harmonic blend, a list of different blends. But once the session starts, it's an intuitive process where I get, you know, I just stay in the moment. It's like a meditation. So I'm just listening for what combination to play here, what combination to use on on this channel. And the channels that we use in acutonics are the eight extraordinary vessels. So they're deeper reservoirs of energy than the 12 ordinary channels. They're very mystical. They tap us into our primordial essence, or what theosophists call the Devachan, where deep, really deep healing can take place. But that is the mechanics. That's the gist of what goes on in the session, what can occur for the individual when they're in a session and beyond the session are some really profound changes in awareness. For instance, one woman I worked on recently, and this was only her second session after years of not having one, she, of course, you know, herself had done lots of work, is very well attuned to subtle energy. But as I was working on her and using those frequencies, the harmonic blends from her chart, she was seeing things light up in her field. She was seeing sacred geometry. At one point, she felt like this, I don't know if you would call it a vortex, but the way she described it was like a column of energy or a column of light. Yeah, I guess you could consider it a portal, where there was just this instant opening from first to seventh dimension. So she had some really profound experiences occur during that session. Another example is a man that I've been working on, and he has, with each consecutive session, he feels that his energy field, or the orb of awareness, that the sphere of energy around him is expanding, and yet it's like his conscious awareness is becoming more serene, more calm, and expanded. So his awareness is increasing. It's almost like, and he also said, even after the first session, that the static of his thoughts, the distraction, those thoughts that would come in and perhaps cause stress, they just evaporated. I don't know, you know, so it's different for each person. Whatever they need is what I believe they will receive. So intention is, of course, a very powerful tool as well.
How does what you're doing compare with cymatics?
Well, cymatics is the study of wave patterns when you apply different tones to either liquid or cymatics use liquid and substances like lycopodium powder, Chladni, was the one who, the father of acoustics, who began using just powder on a steel plate. But yes, so how this correlates with that is that as soon as sound touches, makes contact with anything else, it changes the pattern immediately. And so what I talk about in the book is that life itself is constantly encouraging us to move towards harmony, to move towards unity. And sound is a very powerful tool that it is that medium that restores balance and harmony to the individual and to all life, if used properly and wisely. Of course, sound can be used to break
sound
up matter.
To kill people. You can kill people with sound, too.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes, you can. And again, that's why intention is so very important, the intention of the client as well as the facilitator.
So what sort of, clinical results have you observed using the method that you described?
Well, it's something as simple or physical, I would say, as, reduction in pain, certainly a reduction of stress. trying to think of a really good case study. But again, for me, you know, the most rewarding result are the ones that I just described to you, where the individual is noticing his or her own transformation. Mm-hmm. So yes, I have definitely experienced clinical results. Trying to think about a really good one right now. Physically, the only one that's coming to mind at the moment is a gentleman that I worked on who was having prostate issues, swollen prostate, and within one session, when I used the tones that govern the urinary bladder and kidneys on his sacrum, he experienced immediate relief. So that's one example, but it's not the best example. Sorry,
What about something like I've got friends and clients who've had like serious blockages of their chakras. You know, whenever they meditate or bring energy in, they get chest pain or they start coughing. You know, the energy gets stuck in one area. You've probably seen that. I would think it would be very good for clearing that sort of thing out.
Oh, it is exceptionally good for clearing the chakras.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what was happening with the two examples that I gave you in both the woman and the man. Although I have to say that with the woman, because she works with subtle energy on a regular basis, I don't know that there were any blockages, but she definitely felt that she graduated from one level of managing her energy and being aware to a whole other realm of awareness.
And that's really important when you work with energy, because if you're not aware that certain clients will absolutely zap you of energy, you can end up on the floor. You know, it's really surprising to me to have that happen to me and go, oh my God, it's like, didn't see that one coming. Yeah.
Oh, it's so important. And since I've been working with the tuning fork, because I was doing massage therapy for a while, and I certainly encourage people to seek massage therapy, any of the touch therapies. It's so needed and so necessary. But for me, as a practitioner, I've just noticed that since I've been using the tuning forks, there's something about the sound that almost creates this, even though I'm connected to my client, I don't feel that I'm taking anything on. I feel that the sound is creating a natural, I don't want to say barrier because that's not really accurate, but it allows things to transmute or transform. If something does come into my field, it doesn't stay there because the sound is also helping me to maintain my equilibrium and harmony and balance. And I can't put any scientific reason to that. All I can tell you is there's a difference that I feel when I'm working with this medium from when I was working as a massage therapist or energy practitioner.
Right. Yeah. So chapter 6 is called Cosmic Light and Inner and Outer Space. You want to talk a little bit about that?
Yes, I loved working on that chapter. And I must give credit to the author, Dr. Edward Bynum, Dark Light Consciousness, because it was his book that made me aware of how important, really, the dark matter is. We as humans are conditioned to be fearful of the dark void, the dark mystery. And when I read in his book, in his research, that there is dark matter on the surface of the brain that actually allows the brain to absorb electromagnetic light and frequencies. And this was a huge aha for me, because the dark matter is, quote unquote, the yin essence or energy. It is the void, the great void or the great mystery. And yet we need the darkness, and that's what a shaman does, is see in the dark. But without the darkness, we cannot absorb the light. We wouldn't even really recognize light if we were in the light all the time. And the point for listeners and for potential readers of the book out there is to understand that whatever it is we're going through, call it the dark night of the soul, or just a low point, where we just can't make sense of things, and it feels like we're in the dark. It feels like we're operating in the fog or in the dark. It is a really rich, profound time to go within and to allow the wisdom to just be absorbed. Even if you can't explain it yet, you can't understand it, there is great wisdom and growth that is happening. And it's like analogous to music too. There needs to be space between phrases where we can just process. And I really believe that that is what the darkness allows us to do, is simply just process, just integrate, and trust. So, I can't think of any other specifics. There was a lot in that chapter that talked about how the body is a temple, and that many of these ancient temples were created with the body in mind. The altar being the seat of the soul or the pineal gland. But the main point, cosmic light in inner and outer space, is that we need to have this contrast.
Right. I have an interesting example of that. I was watching something going off Netflix in July. You know, they give you that list of things going off Netflix, and it was the mystery of the Titanic revealed. And the Titanic evidently was sailing into, in the Gulf Stream, which is warm, but a very cold stream was coming down with icebergs, and they were intersecting, and it caused a reverse mirage. So the iceberg was totally hidden. They couldn't even see the iceberg until they were virtually right on it. And then it would have been fine because there was a ship not too far away, but the hot and the warm air caused all the stars to twinkle very brightly, and they were shimmering just like people had never seen that before. It was just like really shimmering. And so the signals between the two boats, they couldn't see each other. They couldn't communicate. And the radio operators dropped the ball too. One of them just went to bed, so they couldn't radio. But if they just sent the Morse code signals, that ship would have come and rescued everybody, and probably very few people would have died. So that's a great example of how you have this contrast of between light and dark, because they couldn't signal because the stars were so shimmery.
And the stars were so shimmering because there were no artificial lights, city lights or anything. They were out there in the
black. Well, I think it also had something to do with the air currents. Like they said, there was a cold air current holding down the warm air current. So when the Titanic sunk, the smoke went up and then went lateral, like a T.
Oh, yeah.
It couldn't go up. I mean, all sorts of really weird things happened that night.
That is really interesting.
Well, you ought to watch it before it goes off Netflix in July.
Yeah,
wild. And they actually scientifically proved it all, too, because they went back in that time frame. That was 1912. Ships had to check the water temperature every 4 hours. So there was a precipitous drop in the temperature, including the water temperature during that time. But that just goes to show that nature can really screw you up. And the Titanic was supposed to be unsinkable. And they said that had it hit the iceberg directly, it wouldn't have sunk. It was just perfect, you know, grazing that caused it to sink, because the engineers had never thought that that would happen.
Yeah, and what you're describing...
usually things run into each other, right? You know, they run into each other, you know, like the battleship ran into the freighter, you know,
what you're describing is also an excellent example of how the four elements combine to create either something harmonious and healthy to happen or something,
or something
chaotic,
deadly.
You know, yeah, right, something deathly, exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, where dark and light, one other example I can give, and I love this, is when they discovered, I don't know, it wasn't too long ago, they discovered the marine biologists took pictures of this giant squid who, mm-hmm. you know, inhabits the deepest, darkest recesses of the ocean. And the squid it's like 40 feet long, but its mm-hmm. eye is as large as a human head.
Oh, my goodness.
And when you think about that, that eye has to be that large for it to take in light. But it's mm-hmm. a perfect example of how the single eye can absorb light, even in the most dark region. So,
I wonder if we've ever caught squid that big. I mean, are they even able to be located? I mean,
I don't know, but I'm pretty sure that there are still videos or pictures of squids that large. I don't know, but what would be the? I'm not sure what the purpose would be to catch one.
Well, I just wonder if they caught one or if they just photographed it. You know, if they accidentally caught one. You know, but it might be so deep that you wouldn't ever do that.
I don't know. Yeah, I think they just photographed
it. Probably exploration. Yeah.
Right.
So, let's see, the next chapter is, did we talk about cosmic light in inner and outer space? Was that what we just were doing?
Right, that's what
the
we
next
were just
chapter
discussing.
Is Nature's philosophy, the mean between the extremes. And that's really neat, because you have the different things. The first one is geometry, number and space, music, number and time, astronomy, number and space and time.
Right.
And then music of the spheres.
Right. So Pythagorean math, Pythagorean philosophy understood mm-hmm. number in that way. And it was symbolized by the four elements and the symbol of the Tetractys, which was a sacred symbol for them. But so these four expressions of number have to do with the language of the cosmos. And it was a huge aha for me, because when you understand that that number is so specific and so divinely intelligent in that way, and you have number in and of itself expressing order, and that's so cosmos itself means order. The number mm-hmm. in and of itself implies order. Number in space is geometry. It's the sacred geometry, mm-hmm. the Platonic solid. Number mm-hmm. in time is music, and number in space-time is astronomy, as you just said. So if the language of the cosmos is astronomy, then it makes sense to me that astrology is the individuated or the individualized signature of the relationship that individual has to the greater whole, the greater cosmos. So, in other words, astronomy is the language of the cosmos, of all that is. Astrology mm-hmm. is the language for the individual's unique connection to it.
Yeah, my understanding that when we're in spirit, we decide which things we're going to concentrate on, which lessons, which karmic things we're going to resolve, which challenges we're going to have. And then it's very important to come in at the exact minute so that the energies of the cosmos support those lessons.
Right. I agree. There are no accidents.
And C-sections can mess that up.
And what if C-sections can mess up?
Well, C-sections that aren't medically indicated, let's put it that way.
Yeah.
Like C-sections at the convenience of the doctor. There's a lot of books written on what C-section babies are like compared to vaginal birth babies. You know, there really is some psychology behind that.
Well, like I'm sure there is, and it is a very interesting contrast to explore. I could be wrong, but my take on that, if you consider that the soul of the individual the soul of the individual pre-incarnation has a say in how their birth will be and what their birth, you know, the conditions of their life, it makes me wonder if perhaps they knew that there would be this interference, or the doctor would say, you know, would exert control, or in some cases the mother, because she's got a busy schedule and she wants the schedule, the birth, to fit into the rest of her.
Yeah.
And people have asked
me
that
question
before.
But, you know, at the last minute, things can change, too. I mean, you can have a scheduled C-section and then, you know, a trauma comes into the ER and bumps you. So,
right.
You know, to what degree is all of that able to be controlled? And I think the answer is there are things that happen that spirit cannot foresee, you know. I mean, there really are accidents that can happen that they don't, that are a surprise, you know, and mess things up in time. But the books that I was referring to say that a lot of times the C-section babies seem to have less force of will in life. You know, they're more...
Oh, well, now that makes a lot of sense.
Go along with the flow, you know, but less drive, less force of will. Because vaginal birthing is difficult for the baby, a lot more difficult than C-sections are.
Yeah. Well, you've given me food for thought. I'm going to have to...
research that, yeah.
Do some research, yep. Very interesting.
Yeah, I think a lot of people, even spiritually based people, don't really understand how basic numerology is to everything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's kind of like the logic mind just says, "Well, that can't be," but actually, it is. Numerology is a lot more basic than astrology is. It's a lot more
numbers
literal.
Are,
I mean, literally, every 7 years we go through cycles, and if you actually map things out, that actually is true. Doesn't really matter who you are. You know, every 7 years it's a different cycle.
Exactly. And there are, these yearly cycles or orbits of the planets that also awaken our, you know, certain rites of passage in a human's life. The Uranus opposition is a powerful one between the age of 38 and 42, when Uranus takes its opposite position to where it was in the natal chart. You know, that's the classic midlife crisis when people just want to bust out of status quo.
The Chiron return, that can get you.
Is that, yes. I certainly am familiar with Chiron, but I definitely feel in my life that the ruler of my sun sign, I have a lot of Scorpio, it's in the first house, so Pluto has definitely been felt very strongly in my life, with constant death and rebirth and transformation. And the Saturn cycle, of course, you know, Saturn returns with natal position at the age of 30 and then 60. So all of these cycles really do affect us. It always amazes me when people say, oh, I don't believe in astrology. Because whether they are attuned to the language or not, I have found that people are attuned to the frequencies. They still respond to the planets, just like plants do. You know, plants don't just use the sun and the moon to grow. They are absorbing the light from the other planets in our solar system. But humans do it too, even if they're not aware. It's just that I think the more we can become aware, the more conscious participation we are able to exert in really fulfilling our destiny and purpose.
Right. Well, this is the example I tell people when they say they don't believe in astrology. I said, one of my patients got me a subscription to the Mountain Astrologer back in 2001. And in August of 2001, there was a little section there. It says, Mars squares Saturn. And on it was on 9/11/2001. It said, there'll be a terrorist attack in a major city that leads to war.
Yep.
So what do you think?
And, well,
not specific enough?
Exactly.
You know, really.
Well, and not
so astrology can predict that sort of thing.
Yes.
And you really need to pay attention to astrology.
Pluto was also on the United States ascendant on that day.
At that time,
So, yes, there was definitely volatility and, you know, violence afoot. So, yeah.
Right, right. It's just, it's fascinating to me how all that works, because I think Edgar Cayce said it. Edgar Cayce described astrology very well and said that it's not really the positions of the planet that cause all of this. It's the energy behind that. You know, it's, he says it's not like that the planet actually influences, but the relationship of everything creates an energy pattern that then has an influence. And I think it's easier to understand that than to say, oh, Pluto, which is not even a planet anymore, think about it, is going to affect me here on Earth. But do you see?
Yes,
it's
however,
probably not that literal. It's probably the energetic patterns.
Well, I have read, too, and maybe this was Edgar Cayce, who said that the planets aren't doing anything to us, but we do have to respond to these planetary configurations, or what I talk about as the doctrine of signatures. Mm-hmm. And I do believe that these transits behave much like needle insertion on a point to activate energy, or, you know, in my case, the tuning fork vibration on the acupuncture point, which are miniature vortices of energy. So absolutely, I do believe that as the transits, you know, trigger or set up these different sacred geometries or harmonic relationships, the square, the 90 degrees, you know, et cetera, they absolutely do activate energy. Now, I do have to comment on one thing that you said about Pluto, because I'm writing about this in my second book. Whether it is a planet, planetoid, really doesn't matter. Let's think about this as an example. Pluto was discovered in 1930, and this was right around the time when Pluto's message is about right use of power. And what did we have occurring at that time? All of these fascist regimes coming into power.
Yeah.
And then think about the atomic bomb.
Yeah.
Think about how tiny the atom bomb is, and yet the devastation it creates. So size really doesn't matter, neither do names, because the point is that all of these planetary bodies, if you will, have electromagnetic energy, and they are in relationship to everything else in the cosmos.
And that's what you have to think about. You have to think about its electromagnetic patterns that keep shifting. And the planets are shifting, too, and that's how we keep track of it, and that's how we speak in it. You know, when you say things square and the, you know, all the different language of astrology. But it is really the energy pattern of the cosmos that pushes things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's, yeah, well, I like to tell people that, because they can understand that better than, say, you know, Saturn affecting something in their life. You see?
Yes. Yes, I see what you mean.
The yeah. third dimensional, literal, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes.
But then I give them a couple of examples, like that mountain astrologer thing, and then they begin to think, well, maybe there's something to this, you know. The predictive
yeah.
qualities are very, very impressive.
They well, are, and that up, is, yeah, go ahead.
Well, we're coming up on the end of our hour. Would you like to give your contact information?
Sure. My website is soundworksbygehl, G-E-H-L, .com. And my email is soundworksbygehl@gmail.com. But my contact info is also right on the website, so it's pretty easy to come by. And thank you for having me on the show, Dr. Colby. It was very, very much fun to have this discussion with you.
Well, great. Well, make sure we get a copy of your next book, and we'll have you back on.
Oh, wonderful.
Well, that's great. Well, thank you very much for joining us. This is Dr.
Yes.
Susan Culp with Temple of Health Radio Show. We've been speaking with Jennifer Gehl, who is the author of The Science of Planetary Signatures and Medicine, Restoring the Cosmic Foundations of Healing. And God knows we need it. Join us next week for Temple of Health Radio Show.